Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and this is the segment we call Dave's Got Guests. Well, one guest anyway. A good old friend of mine, Mr. David Pace, theater critic and flight attendant. Kind of somewhat odd, coincidental, two jobs at once sort of thing, but because we met through...
American Theater Critics Association.
Right, which we both belong to. It's an organization that puts theater critics from all over the country together once or twice a year. We see shows, we discuss, we argue, we...
Grab with each other.
We eat.
We eat.
We eat a lot.
We gain a lot of weight.
And then we go away and forget about each other for half a year, and then we see each other again.
Yeah.
But we hooked up because, you know, you're wonderful people. I know your lovely wife, Cheryl.
Thank you.
And you've been living in Brooklyn for many years.
Seven years.
Before that, Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, which is where I'm from, or that area.
Mm-hmm. And aside from being a theater critic, which you don't do that much anymore now.
Correct.
You're basically a...
flight attendant. Or a steward.
A steward, yes. Well, which do you prefer?
Actually, we were talking about this the other day with the flight attendant. I think steward has a nicer ring to it, so you can call me... Actually, technically, though, I am a flight attendant.
Technically, you're a flight... Okay. How long have you been doing that?
Been doing that for 17 and a half years now.
Oh, my gosh. What made you choose that as opposed to, like, pilot or something else?
Well, I didn't have the training for a pilot, but I was out of college, and I was actually lifeguarding at the time, and this very adorable young thing who was sitting on the deck... said, hey, you look like somebody I know at the airline that I work for. I didn't even know what a flight attendant was.
You didn't have to at that moment.
No.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I want to be where you are. So anyway, that's I went to the cattle call, as they say, for Western Airlines. That was who I was working for at the time. Got hired, or rather, that's where I applied and got hired. And Delta Airlines bought us out two years later, and here I am. I thought I was just going to do it for a year and a half, you know.
But you got either to like it or used to it because why? What were the good things?
Well,
about
it's a very seductive job in many ways. I mean, other than the beautiful flight attendants
yeah.
that you get to work with.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's the sort of thing where you go to work every day and you're working with different people every day, and or at least a pool of flight attendants. So you don't work with the same people every day. And every time you get out of your quote-unquote office, you're in a different city. So a lot of travel benefits, opportunities that way.
Do you get to really enjoy the travel, though, or is it you're in a city for about 5 minutes and you're off to the airport, you sleep, and then it's back on a plane back to LaGuardia?
Well, here in Kennedy, which is where I work out of, I fly international. So I get a 24 to 48-hour layover in a foreign city, which is, you know, substantial time to
see something.
See something and have dinner and figure out that you don't speak Czech very well and that sort of thing. Yeah, but it is long enough to, you know, get a taste of where you're traveling to.
Well, what are some of the oddest or most exotic places that you've been able to go to through being a flight attendant?
That's a good question. I think probably my favorite city next to Paris would have to be Prague. And we flew there for many years. And
Prague is gorgeous.
Really enjoyed that. In fact, I remember your... visiting there years ago, wasn't it, for a critics conference?
Actually, no, that wasn't. That was just through friends.
Was it?
All different kinds of
Because I know
stuff.
You traveled in Europe.
But before. I remember thinking, I didn't like the people of Prague so much, but the city was like a storybook. It was magnificently beautiful.
Right. I guess it was spared the bombing during the World War II, so...
Well, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
But any places even more sort of weird? But those are very almost European continental
cities. Yeah, that's true.
Cities.
I've actually been to Nepal, which is probably the most exotic
All
place
right.
I've been to.
That's cool.
And I didn't actually work. We used to fly to Bangkok, and that was as close as we could get to Nepal in terms of, you know, Delta Airlines flying there. But I did go to trekking for 3 weeks.
Oh, so that was almost like a vacation thing.
And it was more of a vacation. And I think. The other, I would have to, you know, I fly exclusively Europe, really, out of New York, so I can't really speak to any other areas outside of Europe or the Middle East. I love Tel Aviv. We used to fly there before September 11th, and, you know, I used to really enjoy being in that culture.
Well, a given week for you, or maybe 2-week period, what is your schedule like? Is it almost like doctors in training where you're going 48, 72 hours straight, and then you get 4 hours of sleep, and then you're back, and then, or do they work it out differently?
Well, for us, out of Kennedy anyway, we fly one leg usually over to Europe, and we have a 24-hour layover there, and then just usually one leg back. So that's a three-day trip because you have a 24-hour
right.
layover in Europe, and then we have 4 days off typically, 3 to 4 days before
so
we
you basically
do it
have
again.
One flight a week.
One flight a week over, yeah, one round trip.
Yeah, well, that sounds pretty sweet.
That's not bad at all. Yeah,
and that's a full-time gig.
That's a full-time gig. Now, if I were to do it, I can do domestic. That's a very different operation where you're flying sometimes 4 to 5 legs in one day, little hops all around the country.
Okay.
And then you have a shorter layover, maybe 16 hours or even as low as 9 hours before you have to get back up and do it again. So, yeah, I think the international flying is a completely different animal. I much prefer it, even though you're flying all night sometimes. You have sometimes a 15-hour day.
Mm.
You know, that can be kind of taxing sometimes.
But you know when it's over, you've got a long weekend no matter what, you know, as soon as you get back to
When I get back to New York, yeah, I've typically got 4 days off, which is great for somebody like myself who is an aspiring writer. And I'm doing more fiction now, which requires more, I think, focused lengths of time.
Just a little side thing, how is the book going?
Not too well.
Oh, wonderful.
I've got the manuscript. I got an agent. I don't know if I told you that.
No, congratulations.
I did have an agent. And about the time that September 11th hit was when she dropped me. So I think the entire publishing industry was in kind of a tailspin at the time. And anyway, I like to think that's the reason why she dropped me. I like to think that the book is still marketable.
But I guess I wanted to get to this a little later, but since it
sure.
keeps rearing its ugly head,
it's rearing, yeah, ugly with all the hairs growing out of the nose.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean the book. I meant 9/11. How has that changed not only your life as a flight attendant, but I guess all your colleagues, pilots as well as everybody else?
Well, I think the biggest reason, other than just operationally, the changes that we've gone through, that all of us experience when we go to the airport now, it's tough going to work in a police state, which is, I think, what the airports have become. And now that the new federalized screeners are in place, maybe it'll get a little bit more uniform, a little bit more less threatening. But for a while there, during that transition, you had no idea what to expect when you went to the airport in terms of just getting through security. In terms of being a flight attendant, it's tough getting on an airplane now and having to look through, you know, the entire galley area and sometimes cabin areas, looking for bombs, basically. And
you actually go looking to see, hear
if anything's ticking. At the beginning of a flight, yeah. At the beginning of an international flight, the first flight of the day, we're required to do that.
Have you ever found anything?
No.
Or any contraband or any drugs or any weird stuff?
I haven't, knock on wood. But basically, we're being asked to think like a terrorist. You know, where would a terrorist put a bomb on this?
And then you serve coffee.
And then I go out and smile and serve coffee. Yeah, I put my tie on and away we go. So it's kind of, you know, yeah, it is a little jarring that way. It's kind of two jobs. You're a policeman, an amateur policeman, and, you know, they're teaching us self-defense now. When I went through training 17 years ago with Western Airlines, it was how to serve a cup of coffee or a cocktail. But
well, I do want to go there because,
sure.
Okay, before the whole 9/11 thing, you're still a flight attendant. You're still dealing in the air. There's no way to stop the plane in the middle and let people off by parachute. What do you do with someone who has had 8 drinks and is out of control or irate or crazy? Or what do you do?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we do have limited... In fact, we have no access to the cockpit anymore. The cockpit cannot help us once we're in the air. That's what they call a sterile cockpit, and it's not to be... You know, they're not to come out of the cockpit for obvious reasons now. So it's left to us and the passengers that we can recruit to help us. I did have an incident coming out of Copenhagen a few years ago where a man was having an emotional breakdown. He was a heavy smoker and was not able to smoke on the airplane, so we don't allow that anymore. And he was threatening the flight attendants. He was disoriented. He was throwing his food around. And, you know, we had to make the choice as to whether or not we were going to go back to Copenhagen or continue on to New York. And as it was, this is before September 11th, the captain came out and handcuffed him.
Oh.
And planted two huge Danish guys, one on each side of him, and decided to go on to New York. So
these were just Danish people who happened to be on the flight.
yeah, the guys that, that kept an eye on him, sure. We had to kind of marshal their support. But either, it was either that or turn around and go back to Copenhagen. But, you know, that does happen occasionally. And actually, as a follow-up to that story, this guy actually bit the captain when he was handcuffing him. And
Was he arrested?
Pretty ugly. He was taken into custody. And, you know, once that happens, the FBI gets involved and we all had to be interviewed. And it was a big, big hassle. But, you know, you just, you're in a small contained place and you have no idea who's really on that airplane sometimes. And you just have to roll with it, you know. Most of the time we can placate people or, you know, mollify them in some way so that they're not a danger to the rest, to the other people in the cabin. And I think flight attendants should, you know, can be, are said to have some pretty terrific skills that way. I think that's what we're designed
for
in that way.
One last question.
Sure.
And it's funny that because of 9/11, we keep talking about the dangers of the people and what of the pilots and are they able? Can they carry guns at this point? Or
no, but I think it's passed Congress, hasn't it?
So
I think it has.
They will
yeah.
eventually.
They will
but
be.
In the old days, I'm
it
sure.
Scares the crap out of me.
Yeah.
I don't think I want the pilots with guns.
Especially, you know, you're in the air and you shoot through the plane. I mean,
well, and what happens
out
if
the plane?
What happens if he comes out to go to the bathroom? He or she comes out to go to the bathroom and the gun gets into the hands of a passenger who's a lunatic, you know. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I know there's pro and con,
but before
I don't
this,
know all the
before arguments. That was the thing. We're so worried about the people. Now, in the old days, I assume the question was, well, gosh, I mean, you're flying every week.
Yeah,
aren't you afraid of a storm? Aren't you? Mm-hmm. Have you ever had these things where the plane dips like 20,000 feet in 2 seconds? Have you had one of those really terrifying experiences?
You know, it's funny you should say that because last week we were flying to Los Angeles. And working the flight, and we had terrific turbulence, probably the worst turbulence I've experienced in 10 years. And, it's pretty scary. Depending on what airplane it is, you know, you can get some pretty bad turbulence in the back of it, especially. But, the big concern now is more who's on the airplane. That's where we're looking for possible problems. But, there's some mechanical concerns. But, you know, at any one moment, there's 60,000 people in the air over the United States. So you have to realize that still, even after 9/11, you know, you're still safer on an airplane than you are, than we were in the car today driving over here to the radio station.
Wow. Well, David Pace, hope you have felt safe talking to me on my show.
Well, I do have some handcuffs that I may have to... No,
I'll uncuff you later, maybe. Dave Pace, thanks for joining us on Dave's Gone By.